We'll go to the third case of the morning, United States v. Matthew Crist. Mr. Mollo.
May it please the court, good morning. I'm Steve Mollo, and along with Justin Harrison, I have the privilege of representing Matthew Crist, a man who's before the court today wrongly convicted. Mr. Crist is incarcerated. We come before the court today and ask that the conviction be reversed and that judgment of acquittal be entered, or that at a minimum, a new trial be granted. There's a number of issues raised in our briefs, but I want to focus on two this morning. The government's failure to prove the requisite intent for the conspiracy conviction, and secondly, the improper admission of what has become called in the vernacular of the case the family visa evidence. The facts are set forth in detail in our brief, and I'm not going to recap them, but I do want to focus on the crux of the case and the crux of the charge, and that was that Mr. Crist, who at the time a West Point graduate and a State Department official who was stationed in Vilnius, Lithuania, was alleged to have accepted a bribe in the form of an antique motorcycle from this group of four Lithuanians who were seeking entry into the United States. The defense did not dispute at any time in trial that Mr. Crist received the motorcycle. We contended only that he paid for it, and in fact the evidence demonstrated that he had paid for the motorcycle. The government's evidence was extremely weak. Two of the three supposed co-conspirators who testified denied or could not confirm that they participated in any conspiracy. So the government's case rested on a single individual who was facing 32 years in prison and gave inconsistent and incomplete testimony. The government gave everything it had to try and prove this as a bribery case and involving visas for motorcycles, and the jury acquitted on that. And by the way, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of time for rebuttal. So there's an acquittal on the crux of the government's case, the heart of what they were focused on. But the indictment included an additional charge. It included the 371 charge, which was a 371 charge to conspire to violate 18 U.S.C. 1546. And to violate 1546, it would be a conspiracy to use, obtain, and receive documents prescribed by regulation for entry into or as evidence of authorized stay in the United States, namely non-immigrant visas, knowing them to have been procured by means of materially false claims and statements and to have been otherwise procured by fraud and unlawfully obtained in violation of 15 U.S.C. 1546. So it's that intent and knowledge that was at issue.
If you take the motorcycle business out of this case,
correct.
Is there anything else that would have any evidence to support any other motivation that Mr. Crist would have had to go along with this deal and meet these people in their garage and any quid pro quo other than the motorcycle?
Absolutely not, Judge. Judge Evans, the record is devoid of that, and I think the absence of that motive is critical. But more importantly, there is zero evidence, none. There was no testimony by anybody that Mr. Crist had any knowledge that any statement contained on any of these documents was false. The government misstates, and I say this with all due respect to the United States government, but they misstate the evidence in the record. They stated that...
Aren't you supposed to interview these people at the embassy personally?
No, in fact, the evidence was that was not necessarily required. The government chose not to call anybody, one of the senior officials from the embassy, to testify to what the policy was at Vilnius. They called a senior State Department official, a woman who had never been to Vilnius, and testified that the policies could vary from embassy to embassy to embassy. And so there was no proof that there was a requirement that there be an interview. And in fact, Mr. Crist was only involved in granting two of the visas that were at issue. The other two, the evidence was that he was involved in referring these people for visas, and it is the consular officer who makes the ultimate, quote, adjudication.
Did he certify that he personally knew those?
There is not evidence that is not the record. There was no, the referral forms did not include, on those two people, it did not include, excuse me, the government did not introduce evidence of those referral forms. They never came into the case. They were somehow lost. And the court allowed, notwithstanding the fact, the absence of these referral forms, the court allowed the jury to hear that Mr. Crist had referred them because the applications themselves said referred by Matt Crist, but it gave no indication of what the basis for the referral was. But when you look at the government's, recitation of the record, they say the defendant directed them to provide false information on the visa applications. The defendant recommended visas for Avaris and Staga, knowing them that they provided false information. At the defendant's direction, they falsely wrote tourism on the application. When you read the testimony, and we cite to the transcript pages, there is no evidence that Mr. Crist himself knew, that he knew that those statements were false.
Well,
and that is critical.
There's no question that they were false, right? The applications were falsified.
Well, I don't know that they were false at the time that they were made, Judge Sykes. They could have been true at the time that they were made, that these people were actually coming for tourism. And because they did come here for 6 months and went back, all of them did, there was evidence. And then these visas are granted for a 10-year period of time. They allow multiple entry and exit from the country. And by the way, it is the Homeland Security officer, or at the time the customs officer, at the border who actually makes the determination as to whether or not someone's allowed into the country. It's not the issuance of the visa. The visa gets you to the gate. It doesn't get you necessarily into the country. But there's no clear evidence that those statements were false at the time that they were made. They may have later turned out to be inconsistent with their later behavior.
Why are these transactions occurring outside of the embassy at odd hours and odd places?
There was absolute. Well, first of all, Mr. Crist was an economic officer in the embassy. And all of these embassies have an economic officer and a political officer. The economic officer's responsibility is to go out and mesh with the community. These forms are things that were available from travel agents. They were available from the internet. And there was absolutely nothing improper in doing that. And in fact, the government pointed to no regulation. They pointed to no rule, no law that said that the way those transactions occurred was in any way improper. It was their suggestion that it was somehow improper.
Well, unorthodox is perhaps a better word.
Unorthodox.
Giving rise to an inference that he knows what's going on and that he's participating in a fraud.
I don't believe that there was evidence that it was unorthodox. It was evidence that, as we sit here today, we might say, well, gee, this is a government form that should be filled out. It should be filled out in a government office. There was no evidence that that was not done either in Vilnius or it was not done in any other embassy anywhere else or around any other embassy in the world to allow visas to be processed this way. And in fact, the evidence, I believe, a fair reading of the evidence is just the opposite. The fact that these things were available, that travel agents had them, that they could be done that way. And again, absent any motive on his part and absent any knowledge of falsity, and there is no evidence of knowledge of falsity, where is the crime? There is none. They failed to prove that element. And what happened, the reality of it is, that they went full bore for this bribery prosecution, trying to prove up the exchange of the motorcycle in exchange for the visas, and they failed. And after the fact, they were able to get this conviction on the conspiracy, and they had to come back and try and rationalize it after the fact. They did not introduce the evidence to prove up that conspiracy conviction under the 1546 standard of knowledge. So there is simply a failure of proof on that on that conviction, and as a result of that, the conviction ought to be reversed. Now, in addition to that, we face this issue of the introduction of what was called the family visa evidence. Over our objection, over the defendant's objection, the government introduced evidence related to attempts to procure visas for the wife and children of Robertus Grigaitis. He was one of the four people who received these visas. The indictment does not charge that there was a conspiracy to obtain the visas for the Grigaitis family. In fact, the indictment charges that the object of the conspiracy was merely to obtain these four initial visas. The government claimed in the indictment that this was somehow an overt act, and it should have been admitted as either an overt act or as it was somehow inextricably intertwined with the underlying conspiracy. Now, the indictment alleges that the events underlying these four visas and these four individuals occur between November 1999 and March 2000. The alleged conspiracy was complete at the time that these people received their visas. Those people received their visas. Giving the government the absolute biggest benefit of the doubt you can give them, the crime was completed when the people entered the United States. All four had traveled to the U.S. and returned to Lithuania long before any of this family visa evidence arises and the family visa acts arise. It was Robertus Grigaitis, the father in this family, returned in August of 2000, And it was several months before he claimed to contact Mr. Crist about visas for his family members. Both Robertus Grigaitis and Avaris Grigaitis testified at trial that it was in late 2000 and early 2001 when they attempted to obtain the visas for the Robertus Grigaitis family. The conspiracy charge in the indictment had concluded. A conspiracy ends, as this court is well aware, when its main objective is accomplished, and the conspiracy to get these visas for the motorcycles had been accomplished. Therefore, the family visa evidence could not have been an overt act. Now, Judge Dara did rely on what he called the inextricably intertwined doctrine, for lack of a better word. I don't think he used the doctrine, but I'll use the phrase doctrine, to admit this evidence. And basically, those cases that allow the admission of some after-the-fact evidence or unrelated evidence in those circumstances require that it somehow explain some kind of a gap. They explain the circumstances to fulfill a conceptual void. If you were to take this case and lop off that evidence, just say it's out of the case, it would do nothing, absolutely nothing, to elucidate or fill any kind of void of the actions that occur some 8, 9, 10, 12 months before.
I thought this family visa, this failed family visa application, is what brought the activities of your client to the attention of the other embassy officials, because it was out of the ordinary, and that's what started the investigation. Is that not right?
There were issues surrounding this evidence. In fact, there was a disagreement between one of the witnesses that we said should have been called by the government, or we should have been entitled to the missing witness instruction on Sean Wiswesser. There was a dispute between he and some low-level employees, and that is correct, Judge Sykes, that there was some contretemps or whatever dispute at the embassy surrounding that. That does not necessarily provide some basis for admission under this line of cases. I mean, this line of cases talks about there being some conceptual void where, absent some this evidence, the jury would be essentially dumbfounded as to what the case was about. And that's not really what we have here. We had the government telling a coherent story, albeit an incorrect one, as the jury found, of this bribes, of the visa for motorcycle bribe. It didn't fly. So after the fact, they introduced this other evidence, and in fact, I think, confused issues tremendously by trying to suggest that there was some wrongdoing in connection with things that there was not wrongdoing regarding these family visas. So when you take that evidence and layer it on top of what was there already, the absence of any intent once the acquittal has occurred on the bribery charge, it's impossible to see how Mr. Chris should remain convicted of this crime of conspiracy, and at a minimum, he's entitled to a new trial absent that evidence and with the cure of the other errors that we had. I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal if that's all right.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Weiss?
May it please the Court, Michelle Nasser Weiss on behalf of the United States. There was more than sufficient evidence in this case to prove that the defendant, Matt Chris, had conspired to commit visa fraud. The evidence, at the very least, showed, and it was not contested, that the defendant held a presidential commission as a foreign service officer, that he worked for the Department of State, and he was stationed in Vilnius, Lithuania.
It just seems to me that it's... And I agree that he held these positions. He's a West Point graduate and all this stuff. To put his career and liberty at stake would require a finding that he was getting something out of this deal. And what did he get out of this?
Judge,
why would anybody do something like this if the jury acquitted on the bribery charge?
Right, and Judge, we don't know why the jury acquitted on that bribery charge.
Well, that's true. You probably would have been better off not charging bribery and just charging one count, and you wouldn't have that, but you did. And I'm looking at this, I'm trying to figure out what this guy got out of doing this.
Right.
You tell me what's the motivation.
Well, the government's position is that for these four individuals, the motivation was the offer of the motorcycle, that the offer of the motorcycle came only from Ivers Gregaitis, that Ivers Gregaitis offered to the defendant this motorcycle. The defendant agreed, and then the transactions took place. The evidence showed that there was a requirement for an interview at the embassy, an in-person interview, and the witness testimony was that this did provide a purpose to determine whether or not the applicant was being truthful or not.
Was there evidence that this sort of thing was just so bizarre, going to, you know, the embassy official going to the garage where somebody worked and bringing the applications, or maybe it's just good service or something. I don't know. I don't know what they do in these embassies. Mm-hmm. You tell me. I was just trying to figure out why would somebody do something like this?
Right, Judge. And as came out at the sentencing hearing, there were multiple co-defendants who pleaded guilty to providing money in exchange for visas through two middlemen. And so the government's position is that this was not the only circumstance in which this happened, that as was found by the judge at sentencing, that this happened at least 14 times over the course of the 15 months that the defendant was at the embassy.
I'm interested in what evidence the jury heard about motivation. I know you don't have to prove motive, but motive is usually present in these kind of cases.
Yes.
I'd be surprised anybody would risk all this stuff for a motorcycle, $1,000 motorcycle or whatever.
Judge, and I would agree, although the elements of a visa fraud obviously do not require an offer of a thing of value. That is only a requirement, a legal requirement for the bribery count. For the visa fraud, it is just an agreement to conspire to commit this crime.
You mentioned co-defendants. what did they do?
The co-defendants that did not testify at trial?
Well, you said there was. You said a minute ago that there were evidence of co-defendants in thousands of dollars.
Yes, Judge. At sentencing, the government argued that that several co-defendants had provided Matt Christ money through these two middlemen, Darius Rica and another man named Ovidius. And all these people pleaded guilty to the fact that they had provided money in exchange for fraudulently obtaining their visas, that they did not ever go to the embassy to interview. There was one that specifically was highlighted at sentencing and attached to the sentencing document, so it should be in the record. A woman named Virginia McLavoti, she testified that she had never met Darius Reich, or never had met Matthew Christ, that she worked at a fish cannery, and the referral form said that it had Matt Chris' signature on it, said that she's well and favorably known to me and her travel is in the national interest of the United States. And it was adjudicated by Matt Chris. And her testimony was that she provided, I believe it was $3,500 through the middleman to Matt Chris. There was also testimony at trial that at one point Matt Chris actually nominated Ruta Kondroitian. She was a Foreign Service national that worked there. He recommended her for an award for finding all these applications and referrals that were fraudulent. And the testimony came out at trial that every single one of those was either was a referral by Matt Christ. So I think that there was circumstantial evidence, at least at trial, that this was not the sole occurrence that of this happening.
I guess you say circumstantial, it's secondhand, and that's kind of what the motive is. The motive there would be money.
Yes, Judge.
And in that, with these people with the motorcycle, there probably was some sort of affinity with them just because they're both interested in motorcycles.
That's
apparently
correct.
That's a genuine interest that he had. And would it be that there was money involved there too, notwithstanding the motorcycle, or just a friendship thing, or something as favors? What is the evidence?
The testimony at trial was that the defendant, Matt Christ, had actually seen an advertisement in a newspaper for an antique motorcycle, and that he went to Ibarra's workplace, his garage, and looked at this motorcycle, and that he did purchase the motorcycle, that Ivers then delivered the motorcycle to the defendant's place of employment at the embassy. And at that time, and somewhere in the course of that, Matt Chris gave him the business card so that he would have his phone number. Then Ivers determined that this would be a good way to be able to get his visa because he now knows a foreign service officer at the embassy. And Ivers reaches out again to Matt Christ, and at that time he offers him a motorcycle in exchange for the visas, and that's where it progresses from there. There's no evidence at all that they were business associates or anything like that that would come that would rise to the level of a Class A referral, which is reserved for high-level contacts and is not questioned by anyone in the embassy.
Now, there's no doubt that $1,000 was paid for this motorcycle.
Correct? No, Judge. At trial, that was the argument from the defense. They showed a couple of checks that were made for cash at the embassy that totaled $1,000. And the government then, in response and rebuttal, showed that there was an entire series of checks over this time period. That's essentially how an employee over there has an ATM. They cash checks at the embassy so they can have walking around money. And that the total amount of money cashed during that time was pretty exorbitant, and two $500 checks was nothing out of the norm in this situation.
Was there any testimony about what the market value of that motorcycle was?
Yes, Judge. A man named Roland Slabone testified regarding...
So Judge Sykes and I are from Milwaukee, where Harley Davidson sells motorcycles for $30,000.
I think that this bike was not worth that much, although I think that the defendant may have thought it was. But yes, there was an expert in vintage motorcycles, Roland Slabone, who testified. And the testimony also came out that the defendant had contacted Roland Slabone. He's kind of the world expert on vintage BMW motorcycles. And the defendant had contacted Roland Slabone just a couple days before adjudicating a visa for one of these individuals.
So how much did he say it was worth?
I believe it was under $1,000, Judge. I don't recall the exact amount.
So he overpaid, if he paid $1,000.
Well, I think that might be quite possible, actually. The testimony
a business transaction when the first
motorcycle was a business transaction when he went out for the first time and purchased the motorcycle. The testimony is actually that Ivers and Robertus were brothers, and the testimony was actually that Robertus had provided a motorcycle to Ivers with the understanding, not explicitly, but with the understanding that this was going to be the motorcycle that would be given to Matt Christ. And Ivers was very cunning, and he actually kept that motorcycle because that was a much higher valued motorcycle, and he gave Matt Christ one of his own. Now, Robertus did testify at trial that he received some parts from Ivers in exchange for that motorcycle, but it could be quite possible, Judge, that the defendant overpaid for this motorcycle.
So the first transaction is legitimate.
Yes.
And your focus is on what happened after that.
Yes. The first transaction was just a purchase of a motorcycle. This was an interest of the defendants.
And a second motorcycle was delivered after the
yes.
visas came through?
Yes, Judge. The visas were all adjudicated either personally by the defendant or based on a referral by the defendant. And then one of the defendants, Ivers, traveled out to Matt Chris' place, his home, and delivered the motorcycle there. And then another witness, Tom Wilbur, who was a friend of Matt Chris, he testified that he saw the motorcycle displayed sort of as a display piece in Matt Chris' home.
And then there were promises of another motorcycle or motorcycles in exchange for the family visas
that's been the subject
of the briefing?
That's right, Judge.
But nothing ever came of that because those visas were not issued.
Exactly. Okay. What happened is that Ivers had been the main contact with Matt Christ, and after they had all traveled on the visas, Ivers contacted Matt Christ and said, Robertus, he is a family. He wants to bring the family here to America. He would like to get visas. Would it be okay if Robertus called you? And it's possible I could give you another motorcycle if you do this. And then Robertus showed up, met Matt Christ at a gas station, had the applications filled out for his wife and his two kids, had written in tourism just as he did for the other ones. And then Matt Christ attempted to get these passed through, and that's where it all kind of fell apart. That's where it was red flagged because it's very unusual for a husband to get a visa without his family coming at the same time to get a visa. And for the family visas, those were the ones that had the actual referrals attached to them, referral memos that said that they were well-known, personally known, and it was in the interest, national interest of the United States for them to travel. With regard to the family visas, contrary to what Mr. Momo says, the family visas actually are charged in the indictment, as found by Judge Jarrett. The pivotal paragraph here is it's paragraph 3 in count 1 of the indictment, which is the charging paragraph. And the time period charged there is beginning at least as early as August of 99 and continuing to at least February of 04. Christ and Ivers Gregaitis, along with individuals A, B, and C, who are Robertus, Stauga, and Mendigus, and others known and unknown to the grand jury, did conspire to commit certain offenses, including visa fraud. And first off, the time period there includes the time period, it encompasses the time period for the family visas. Also, the fact that it says defendants A, B, and C, I don't recall which one is Robertus, but one of those individuals is Robertus, and it was Robertus conspiring to obtain the visas for his family. Also, in the overt acts, it is listed as an overt act, and so therefore the government was able to bring in evidence of that. This was a burden that the government took on, and in closing arguments, we argued that evidence of the family visas, and it was appropriately allowed in by the judge. And as you know, that it, the standard on appeal is abuse of discretion. If there are no further questions, then I'll rest on my brief.
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
Mr. Molo?
I'll be brief. The government is confusing issues. Saying there was no testimony from any woman working in a fish cannery. She's talking about issues that were related to the sentencing, related to their investigation, that was not evidence before the trial court, to Judge Evans' point.
Is this what they're referring to as maybe relevant evidence
for
sentencing?
It was not introduced at trial.
It was for sentencing?
It was for sentencing. And so it is not admissible, and it's not appropriate to consider the validity of the conviction. And so, in fact, I'm a little surprised that they would get up here and even suggest to the court that it could consider evidence that I had no opportunity to cross-examine, that we had no ability to challenge, with other witnesses, that they could come in here and say that can be considered to support the conviction. As to the money exchanging hands, there's no question that there was $1,000 paid. There were two $500 withdrawals, the only two $500 withdrawals from Mr. Christ's account on either side of a weekend. And there was testimony from his father that he had a phone conversation with him, that they shared a lifelong interest in motorcycles and cars, that Mr. Christ had collected these for many years, and that he said that he was about to buy this motorcycle.
Who was the payee on the checks?
The payee on the checks was cash. These were cash. He got cash.
Okay.
Which is not surprising. I mean, this is in Vilnius, Lithuania. I would think the Lithuanians would want U.S. cash for this, and
it was the father's testimony linking the checks to
The checks were there, and the father said that Mr. Christ told him he was going to pay $1,000 for a motorcycle.
But that's what I mean.
Correct.
The checks, there's nothing on the face of the checks that shows this is for a motorcycle payment.
No. But the timing of it was consistent with when he acquired the motorcycle, and it was consistent with his father's testimony, which under the Hillman Doctrine comes in to say he was going to do that which he said he was going to do.
Now, did he acquire a second motorcycle?
He did. He did not. There was no. And this is another fiction of the government. There's second motorcycle is not even an issue in the case. And I just want to make clear, Robertus Gregaitis, the father of the family thing, testified. When asked by the government, he testified on cross examination. Did you take part in any deal to obtain visas for motorcycles? The answer: No, I did not. He's asked the question, and you did not offer Matt Christ anything for the visas for your wife and children. He answered, I never did. I never offered anything to him. And you cannot say that if you had offered Matt Christ something of value, he would have been more likely to get the visas for your wife and children. He responded, that's correct. I cannot say that. They did not have the evidence of intent. And frankly, I urge the court, that the argument I just heard completely distorts what happened at trial. Please read the record. Please go through the briefs again, because there was no testimony that linked Mr. Christ that showed him to have the knowledge. Judge Evans, you're absolutely right. There was no motive. Judge Sykes, I ask you to please read the testimony of the State Department official who clearly indicated that she didn't know what the appropriate procedures were, that it, to the extent that interviews happened, that they were pro forma, someone might conduct up to 100 in a day, and that if just because something happened off campus, if you will, doesn't mean that it was somehow inappropriate, certainly not illegal. And in fact, Mr. Crist's job as the economic officer was to go out and encourage people to travel to the United States and encourage them to do this business. This man does not deserve to be in jail. He is innocent. The government failed to prove him guilty beyond a reasonable doubt of either crime. And it's unfortunate that he today sits incarcerated as a result of confusing evidence that was submitted and should not have been before the jury.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thanks to both counsel, and the case will be taken under advisement.